Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Rabbi Joseph Potasnik, his friends and family. I want this to be the best year ever for Rabbi Eric Greenberg, his friends and family. I want this to be my best year ever. And we all want this to be the best year ever for all our friends, relatives, and loyal listeners worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce, Barry, and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into Joyce Barry and Friends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is joycebarry.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
And that is a technical difficulty while we're waiting for the rocky music. Okay, it must be in bondage today. So much for that. At any rate, folks, before we start today's show, we are so blessed and humbled to have with us Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Rabbi Eric Greenberg to talk about the significance of Passover. Before I turn the show over to the rabbis, let me just share with you to check out our archives. March 29th, we had Beverly Nadler talk about Passover blessings. It was a light, kind of fun show. And then on Friday, on March 30th, we had Father Brian McWeeny along with Rabbi Eric Greenberg. Father Brian talked about Good Friday and Easter, which it was, joined by Rabbi Eric Greenberg in the conversation. And then they both talked about Passover and those blessings, brothers in faith, commemorating both holidays, Passover and Easter. Today, we have the one, the only Rabbi Joseph Potashnik here to lead us off in a Passover celebration. Go ahead, Rabbi Joseph.
Well, I think I'm on the Eric Greenberg program with Joyce Barry as a guest because he does so many programs with you. Thank you so much. Joyce, as I'm speaking with you and Eric, I'm looking at a card here that just arrived from Cardinal Dolan with "May the love of Passover be with you and your family." And I think to myself how refreshing it is, how reassuring it is that we have this relationship with members of different faith communities where we can celebrate our respective holidays with reverence for our own tradition, respect for the other, because as you know, looking back at history, this was not the case. My father and mother, who grew up in Europe, told me they would hide, for example, on Good Friday, because the readings, the liturgy was so hateful. You know, it targeted the Jews, perfidious Jews, blamed them for the crucifixion, and Jews were attacked if they were found, but many simply refused to go into the streets. Look at where we are today, that we can celebrate these holidays openly, joyously, with full regard for one another. As a matter of fact, Joyce, you mentioned before we went on the air that you have members of the non-Jewish faith at the Seder table. Think how far we've come. Think how far we've come, where we were and where we are. We need to be very thankful we're living during this time when we can be separate and together simultaneously. So Passover is a great moment. It's a ritual. It's a ritualistic evening that resonates with so many people of so many different ages. And isn't one of the messages of Passover is that you can sit at the Seder table and no matter what beliefs you have, there's a place for you at the table. No one's excluded. My mother would always teach me there's always room for one more at the Seder. I said it recently in an article that when I would call home before Passover and say, "Mom, Dad, what should I bring home for the holidays?" My mother would correct me. She said, "Don't bring anything. Bring someone. Someone who doesn't have a place to attend for Passover." So we really need to be so grateful for what we have. And what better way than to allow people to sit together at one table?
What was particularly interesting about the Seder yesterday is that it was at the same time we had Easter on Sunday. At the same time, we had April Fool's Day. Everything seemed to be going on. But I have to say that Moses was no fool when he did what he did to get the Israelites safe and out of the bondage of so many years.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I know that there are some people who think Moses' alternate name was Charlton Heston because we have seen, you know, the Ten Commandments so many times. It was on TV the other night. But, you know, it was a wonderful opportunity for, you know, of course there were certain exaggerations, but isn't that, you know, another way of conveying the message and meaning of Passover? The plagues that you saw, Edward G. Robinson, you know, is challenging Moses' authority, Aaron and the golden calf and all of that. So there's a lot of story. There's a lot of ritual. And above all, I think, and I was reading an article about this yesterday, what makes Passover so special for us is it's all about the family. When I say the family, it's our own and the extended family. You know, we can talk about religion, but there is an area where, you know, religion has its own directives. But when you're family, you react somewhat differently. So when a Jew was in trouble, think of all of the protests we had for those in the Soviet Union until they went free. Think of how we talk about refugees from Syria. We are family. And Passover, the message of Passover is it's all about family. That's why, you know, when Jews are persecuted anywhere, it's not just about religion. It's the fact that they belong to us and we belong to them. So I'd like to think that that spirit is one that will pervade so many places. We'd be in a better place today if we regarded different people as members of the human family, because we all have that same spiritual blueprint. We're all descendants of Adam and Eve, according to tradition. We'd be far better off if we saw each other as equals at the table. And by the way, we talk about the different kids, you know, the wise. I don't like the word wicked. I think that's a bad kind of description, because maybe a contrary or a challenging child. Why do you call someone wicked who's ready to sit at the table with you and ready to ask a question? You may not like the way it's phrased, but so what? The person is there. You have the simple child, the one who can't ask a question, but they're all together. And as someone said, there may not even be four different children, but four manifestations of one person. There are times we're smart. There are times we don't know. There are times we're challenging or rebellious. There are times we just, you know basics, the simple stuff. So there's a lot of meaning at the table.
Rabbi, I've always been curious about something since as long as I can remember having Passover Seder, how we always did it. We had the book, the Haggadah, you know, and we'd all read, and we'd go around the table and read. Since you're a rabbi, do you officiate through the whole service, or do people actively participate that way in the telling of the story, besides, you know, in the wine ritual and everything else, do you officiate?
Well, you can lead a Seder, but I think the key is to include everyone, because there's a statement in that Haggadah that each person should embellish the story. Each person should talk about the story. So it shouldn't just be one narrator. Each one has a role at the Seder table. And I think people enjoy participatory celebrations. They don't want to just come and listen to someone else. They have what to say in light of what I just mentioned. You have to, you know, give really a place for each person to say, this is what I believe. This is, look, I had someone raise a challenging question. It's not a new question, but I've heard it before, but it's a good question. They said, why were there 10 plagues? You know, we drink four cups of wine and we have 10 plagues. He said, why couldn't we have four plagues and 10 glasses of wine? You know, why so many plagues and so many innocent, you know, so many innocent people suffered, right? He says, well, what kind of, you know, where's your compassion that you're reading all these plagues and all this suffering? And I said, look, I don't have an easy answer, but I would tell you this, that evil comes at a severe price. When people perpetrate evil as Pharaoh did to the Jews, evil is not a neatly contained package. It spreads and it impacts innocent people. Pharaoh had the opportunity to stop at any moment and to let the people go. He always had that opportunity. But the fact that he didn't, you know, look at what goes on in Iran today. You have an evil dictator, an evil ruler. Look how innocent people suffer. And you can go around North Korea. I mean, you can pick your spot.
Syria.
But, right? Syria. Evil, right? Evil comes with a high cost. And unfortunately, a high cost for people who are, you know, who have not done anything wrong, but simply have the misfortune of living under that rule. So to me, you know, that's the message there. And also the fact of looking for the hidden. You know, when I was at school, I remember, rabbinical school, I remember somebody asked this question, which is more important, the first matzah that you eat and recite the blessing, or the matzah later on that you have to go search for, the hidden matzah we call the afikomen?
Mm-hmm.
And his answer was the hidden matzah is more important. Why? Because you have, there's an imperative. You have a responsibility to seek and search for the person who's disconnected, someone who's out there, who's not seen, who's not visible. Get that person at the table. Look for that individual who finds no connections and try to find a place so that person is comfortable at a Seder table. So the hidden is very, very important as well.
The whole thing with Elijah, too, that's the part I appreciate, waiting for Elijah to come. I feel like more than ever we've been waiting for Elijah. The world is not doing very well today in terms of hatred and animosity, the anti-Semitism in Paris, people that were killed, elderly people that were killed, two Jewish women in the last couple of weeks. It's just so scary, because people are not standing up and fighting it. So if you don't say anything, it just seems to be going on more and more. And in our universities, I just want all of that to pass over very quickly.
Well, there again, we have a responsibility to be there, to protest, not to be silent. Look, it's not just about Jews. It's about persecuted Christians. You look at so many trouble spots in the world. Look at the suffering of the Coptic Christians in Egypt, right? You go to a church, you pray, and you get blown up. It could happen on a Good Friday. It could happen, at Christmas. When more people are in church, there's a greater likelihood of being destroyed. You find because some people see you as different than they are, they will not tolerate you. So you're right. It's important that we do something, but let's also remember that we've come a long way. You look at the new alignments, the new relationships that are taking place. Rabbi Eric knows very well the Saudi leader met recently with some Jewish leaders in New York. Who would have thought a representative of Saudi Arabia would sit down with Jews and talk, in terms of a relationship? You have now the ability to fly over Saudi Arabian airspace, something that wasn't in existence before. So I think we need to look very carefully and tell the whole story, not just the partial story, because it's very depressing if you don't see the other good things that are happening in the world.
Yes, it's important always to focus on the good and the positive. But as these things are happening, we think of way back when. It just started somewhere. It didn't just start on the mass killings of people. It started and people were silent. You can no longer be silent.
Yeah. And also, look, the fact that this year, we say next year in Jerusalem, and we used to talk about, the idea of the people coming together and celebrating in Jerusalem. Now, this year, in May, you'll have the opening of the American Embassy in Jerusalem. Now, years ago, that was just a dream, that was a wish, but now it's a reality that's going to happen. Give thanks for that. So I think, again, if we only convey negative, if it's all about suffering, servitude, then people are going to say, hey, you know what? Let me go find something else to do because I don't want to be depressed all day. So look at, and the story is one of liberation. Jews, look at where we were. All those years, 210 years in Egypt suffering, and finally we were released. So today we have a relationship with Egypt, right? So again, look at the hatred of the past and look at where I did a Seder, an interfaith Seder, recently here in New York at the fire department. And next to me was an Egyptian, somebody who grew up in Egypt. And Eric knows him as an Albanian Muslim, Tahir Kukash.
Oh, yeah.
He's sitting next to me, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. Here we are reading about the plagues visited upon Pharaoh and the people, and I have an Egyptian sitting next to me. And I turned, I stopped the Seder. I said, Tahir, I know this may be an uncomfortable moment because we're talking about the enumeration of the plagues. I said, but just keep in mind, you're sitting next to me, and I'm sitting next to you. What does that say? It says that the adversary of yesterday can become the ally of today. Look at the relationship between Germany and Israel, Japan and America. People who hated each other now have become friends. That's a positive story. That's a message we need to convey as well.
That was great, Rabbi. Boy, you thought quickly on that one, how to handle it and make it all work. That was very extraordinary. Talk a little bit about the different rituals at the Seder table and what they represent.
Well, I started the Seder, and I'm sure Eric has spoken about it as well, I held up a spoon and a feather. Mm. And I said, look at this. Jewish tradition teaches us that we have to search for particles of chametz, the bread, all of the bread derivatives, search for them. So we have this, custom of placing little breadcrumbs in different places and then collecting them. And then we burn them, so we're eradicating the chametz from our midst. But we also burn the candle and we burn the spoon. So I said to people, isn't that strange? Here you just gathered everything with this, using the feather, using the spoon, and now you're burning it and a candle. Why are you burning it? Interesting answer. Because the purpose of these articles is to find something that shouldn't be there. So we say, while it serves an important purpose, there are people in life who always look to find fault. They look for something wrong. We're going to burn them. We're going to burn those particles too. We're going to get rid of everything, the critics as well as the chametz. And the other question is, why don't we just put on a light to find out? Why do we need a candle to search for the chametz? Why don't we just put on a light in the room? And the answer is, that's too easy. Too easy. You know, sometimes people look for the easy way in life. And very often, as we say, the shortcut is the long way, and the long way is the shortcut. The things that are done in an arduous fashion have greater meaning. I was telling people, look at the matzah, right? Look at matzah. What's matzah made of? Flour and water. That's all it is. Flour and water for 18 minutes. And yet, it has this prominent place at the Seder table. I think when we look at that, we recognize that some of the greatest moments in life are the simplest moments of life. The time we spend with each other, the time talking to each other, listening to each other, very simple stuff. I was writing recently that I asked my son, what does he remember about growing up? What were the best times that he enjoyed? He said, and I thought he would say, we went to Mexico, those toys he gave me. You know what he said? The times we spent in the car talking to each other. Simple. Flour and water, that was what had an impact on him. I think I mentioned to you, Joyce and Rabbi Eric, that I've never seen grandparents on a cell phone when they're with their grandchildren. Parents I've seen do it, not grandparents. Because for grandparents, the time spent with those grandchildren is precious. Precious. Don't let anything else interfere. So, you know, the Seder, you know, has this beautiful ritual, but I think if you look beyond the surface, the ritual has a lot of meaning and message for us. And it's the simple stuff is the very important stuff for all of us.
Traditionally, during Passover week, there's two Seder services. Have you heard of occasions where there may be more than two?
Yeah, I mean, I've been to more than two Seders. Interfaith has become a very, very popular tradition with many people, where they have the two Seders, but they say, you know what, we want to expand the Seder. There's a women's Seder. There's a chocolate. I've heard of, you know, people love chocolate. Let's have a chocolate Seder. We're going to have everything in chocolate. Yeah, you can embellish it, but, you know, I often find the following. Don't lose the message, the basic message of Passover. Sometimes we go into other areas and we lose sight. We lose sight of the importance of this celebration for the Jewish people. But yeah, there are other Seders. There's a Freedom Seder. Someone just sent me, I think it was in Tennessee or Mississippi, I'm not sure, the Jewish Labor Committee sent me a Haggadah with, you know, Martin Luther King occupying a prominent place, the quotations of King and others who are civil rights leaders, but it was a civil rights Seder. So yeah, and let me also mention this. In the ghettos, I was reading about the Kovno ghetto in Lithuania. In the ghettos, there was Sidorim. Can you imagine being in a ghetto, being in a camp, and sitting at a table and saying, you know, we're slaves, but we're going to be free, and how one could sit at a Seder? I mean, how much moror do you have to experience that you sit in a concentration camp and yet conduct a Seder? But people realize that this tradition is so precious, we don't want to lose it. And also the hope for, you know, that next year we would be free.
I love the idea of the interfaith Seders. I know you in turn have been to Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve. So I think that's awesome, and to serve as a role model for all human beings to embellish. If we all treated each other with respect and appreciation and try to understand their traditions rather than judge their traditions and who they are, what a great world it truly would be.
And I think, and I know that Rabbi Eric has been involved in many interfaith efforts, is part of it is that you don't compromise your identity. When you walk into an interfaith arena, you walk in representing your faith. Right. You're not there to emulate the other person. You're not there to dilute who you are to satisfy the other person. You're there to say, this is my tradition. I'm proud of it. I want you to be proud of yours. And let's be proud together. But let the traditions not in any way mimic one another. They stand on their own. There may be commonality, common understandings, common meanings, but each one of us is able to represent publicly, proudly, a tradition that is so precious to us. Because sometimes, you know, when you have interfaith, say that people are afraid to, let me not press my, you know, let me be somewhat softer in mind so that I don't possibly interfere with the other. That's not what interfaith is about. It's about putting everything on the table, saying this is who we are, this is who you are, and look how we can live together with one another.
Very, very inspiring indeed. I think that's wonderful. Rabbi, what message do you want to, overall message do you want to leave with our audience today?
Joyce, when you spoke earlier, you talked about human suffering in the world. You talked about anti-Semitism. You talked about hatred of others. I think we all have to promise that the moror will be tempered with the charoset, with that sweetness, that sweet mixture. It's very easy to find tsuris. My father used to say, tsuris will find you. You'd have to go looking for it. Right?
Yes,
But, right. We all face tsuris. Nobody lives without tsuris. However, keep in mind that we have an opportunity to bring some joy, some happiness into other people's lives. We have a chaplaincy program at the Board of Rabbis. We have chaplains going into assisted living facilities, nursing homes, correctional facilities, where people are hurting deeply. And what do we say? You go in there and give them a hug, show them that you care, make, you know, bring a little haroset into the lives of those who unfortunately have to taste the moror, not just during Passover, but throughout the year.
And the whole thing with raising the glass and the wine, why is that so important?
Well, because wine, you know, we say wine gladdens the heart. So, you know, wine is a sign of celebration. But remember, when we use the wine for the plagues, we spill a little bit out to show that human suffering matters to us. Yes, there was, Jewish victory, but it came at a price. The price was that other people lost their lives. We said innocent people lost their lives because they suffered with Pharaoh. So we remember them too. So, you know, I often feel to be a Jew, and I'm sure this is true for other faith groups, to be a Jew is to live with contradictions. You live with the parsley and the salt water. You know, hope, and yet there was sadness. You learn the moror, the bitterness, and yet charoset, the sweetness. And you know, that's what Shakespeare said, parting such sweet sorrow. I always think he took it from the Passover Haggadah. It's about moror and charoset. It's about parsley, karpos, and the salt water. You have to learn to live with both. Somebody sent me a box of chocolates for Passover. Now, you know what kind of chocolates they were? Bittersweet. Bittersweet chocolate for Passover. And I thought, that's a reality. That's reality. You can't always have sweet chocolates. You have bittersweet chocolates. And we learn to live throughout our history. There's been much bitterness, but there's been sweetness. We learn to live with both. Hopefully, we're going to have more sweetness than bitterness. That's why you say, may this be the best year ever.
Amen.
Rabbi, what is your special prayer? I love when you lead us in a prayer from your heart.
Well, I would suggest the following prayer. The word for darkness in Hebrew is shachar. The word for dawn in Hebrew is shachar. It's the very same word. May all of us recognize as we go through some difficult, dark times of shachar that with commitment to our faith, commitment to our family, that ultimately we will see another shachar, the dawn of a new day for us and for all human beings. Amen.
Amen.
And Rabbi, just so you know, one of my most special prayers is that you join our show much more often. So let's see if my prayers are answered.
Well, you don't know what my prayer is, so you know.
I'm not sure
all
I
right.
want to hear it.
Yeah.
But God bless
Listen, it's
you,
always
Rabbi,
a
you and yours.
Well,
we
thank
love
you, Joyce.
You and
thank
we
you
appreciate
for all you.
You.
And thanks for bringing us all together. All right, you be well. Bye-bye.
Okay,
thank you so much for joining us, Rabbi. Okay, in a moment, I'm going to bring on Rabbi Eric Fort Greenberg, my other very favorite rabbi, but first this. Okay, so our audios are not working in the studio. I figured I would take a shot, but basically it was just to share with you folks, to let you know that every day is a special day where we have extraordinary guests, extraordinary topics, always designed to make a difference and an impact in your life. Rabbi Eric, you were with us with Father Brian McWeeny. Good to know that you're as close to the priests as you are to the rabbis, and you represent the true meaning of interfaith.
Yeah, we try to keep it equal. I give equal time to Father Brian and to Rabbi Joe.
Yes. Okay. Where do you want to start
as regards to
Passover?
Yeah, it's really since we last talked on the show with Father Brian, we've had obviously Good Friday, we've had Easter. It's snowing in New York, by the way, if anybody is interested. In April 2nd, so there's an April Fool's joke for you. And so you start to think, here we're going through these holidays, it's still Easter season, and as Rabbi Joe said, we are spending time together. I had at our Seder, we had a Catholic, we had a Buddhist, and yeah, you know, it's so important, as Rabbi Joe alluded to, you don't compromise your own faith and your own, rituals when you are in an interfaith setting. What you do is you present to the best, the best highlight of who you are and what your faith represents. And I have to tell you, it was fascinating. The Buddhist guest that we had was really interested asked really good question, interested in the story of Passover and what it means, for the Jewish people. This is a story that, transcends 3,000 years, 30, depending on what archaeologists say, 3,400 years perhaps. And it's evolved, it's changed. The customs have developed depending on where Jews lived. As we know, Jews were forced out of various countries over history and had to move to Spain or England or Portugal or, wherever they were settled and then had to leave. But they picked up some of the local Babylon, picked up some of the local, flavor and rituals there that affected Jewish tradition to a certain extent. So we have this wonderful history of differing, customs of food and practice. But yet the Haggadah is basically the same as it's been for hundreds of years. And, we stick to this particular tradition, and I think that's something that fascinated the non-Jewish guests at the table. So I think that's something we can explore.
Yes, let's explore on.
Well, the Catholic at the table, for instance, this is Friday night was the eve of Good Friday, so in Christian tradition, that's Jesus has passed somewhere between noon and 3 p.m. and so this is a somber moment for Christians. Of course, the tradition is he rises on Sunday. And, of course, for Jews, here we are celebrating, going from slavery to freedom. So what I did was I made it particular, which is the Jewish story, the story of, the liberation. But also I brought in a worldly view, as you said before, Joyce, what's going on in the world. And this is about Jews and our history, but it's also about where the world is today. So what I did was bring in the refugees that are suffering around the world. There are, you know, hundreds of thousands. There were millions, actually. There are hundreds of thousands who have died in Syria in their horrific war that's being waged on innocent Syrian women and children, men, for the last 7 years. Displaced millions, 6 or 7 million people displaced from their homes inside Syria, and then others forced to be refugees. Well, look, the Jews were refugees, in Egypt. They fled, and it's important to bring that up in the context of that. This story is not an ancient story. It's not old. It's not old history. It's being lived today by other peoples, and we, certainly the Jewish people and the other faith representatives at our table, agreed that we need to do something, not just Syria, but the Rohingya being persecuted, a genocide in Burma. We need to recognize that, and we need to do something. We need to act. We need to raise our voices for their lives. I mean, this is important for the kids around the table too. We had young ones, we had high school, we had college kids, and it's hard to remember when you were a kid. The relevance you start questioning as you're a teenager, the relevance of your story. In fact, the Wicked Son. And I agree with Rabbi Potasnik that that's probably not the greatest title for the second son, but that second son who questions in a sort of some might say snarky way, what are these observances and rituals that God gave to you, and the emphasis is on the you, not him. So he's sort of distinguishing himself separating himself from the commands. I think it's important to have the next generation engaged in the principles and the virtues of what this slavery to freedom is about, and it's relevant even as we speak. So that's something that we focused on, and I think is important for everyone to spend a few minutes on, at a Seder.
I so agree with you. And, when we did reference what's going on in the world and how scary it is with the anti-Semitism, I like the way Voltaire put it, every man is guilty of all the good he did not do. Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could do only a little. Those are some of my favorite quotes because I think they really hit home how everyone can have a voice. I look at the kids today, the students, marching all over the country and taking on David and Goliath. The kids taking on the NRA and the difference they've already made and the impact they're already having. I hope to have some of these activists, students on the show very soon. I'm so behind what they're doing. So I think with Passover, we reflect back on the suffering, the bondage, the hatred, all that was going on then, and just reflect a bit on what is going on now and ask ourselves, what can we do? What role can we take? What voice can we have?
Right, exactly. Going back to the idea of introducing other concepts into the Seder, not to diminish, not to take away from the core message, which is a particular for the Jewish people, but to once done, to expand it. The environment the environment is under attack. I introduced some of the concepts of for instance, the right to clean water. There are people living without water, and that's a human right, and that's something that's a form of slavery to the powers that be that are either polluting their water or not allowing them to live, you know, a full healthy life. And, you know, that's something that also needs to be introduced as well. You know, we could take this a lot of ways, but I think the message here is that while the story is particular to the Jewish people, we must recognize its significance in the world today. Slavery exists today in the world. Sex trafficking of young girls and boys is a huge problem. You know, the New York Board of Rabbis is very concerned about these issues. USA for UNICEF, the humanitarian groups. The issue of slavery is not gone. The issue of mistreating, you know, young children and forcing them into you know, sex slavery is right in front of us, and there's so much for us to do. And I think that you know, that Passover represents an opportunity to raise consciousness about these things and redouble our efforts, not just to, you know, sit around the table and talk about it, but also then to take the next step and to do something about it.
Yes, folks. And if you want to know what the next step is, are there any websites that you can refer people to so they know how they can make a difference?
Well, you know, off the top of my head, but what I don't have them. I do can send you to the New York Board of Rabbis and Rabbi Potasnik's the deputy director. Rabbi Gerson, who is heavily involved in these issues, and would be very happy to you know, to direct people to organizations that are fighting sex trafficking and slavery and that. I can tell you that for refugee issues, HIAS, which is stands for the Hebrew Immigrant, I can't remember what the A is for. Service. It's a Jewish approach and organization that deals with helping refugees. So it's probably HIAS.org. They are a wonderful organization that you know, has been helping refugees for about 100 years. Started out as the European Jewish refugees, and they've now have turned to the major crises around the world, Syria and the Congo and Burmese and all. The other group is the American Jewish World Service, AJWS, and I'm sure it's www.ajws.org, which is also heavily involved with helping the needy and refugees and people around the world. So those are two.
What was that, American Jewish Service?
The American Jewish World Service,
AJWS.
Yeah, AJWS is a wonderful organization that also does.
.org?
Yeah, they're usually, if they're a nonprofit, they're usually .org. You can, if you Google it, people can Google it and find out. But those are two.
Well, one of them I know about because every single week I watch Israel Now News. It's on once a week, and then it's repeated the next day. So I watch that. That's where I get all my news from, the heart of Israel. And
yeah.
I believe they end their show, the last 10 minutes or so, about Karen Hayesod and what they're doing. Every single show has that, how you
right.
can make a difference. So,
well, and let me add, by the way, since we're – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, I'm glad you reminded me the show is a great resource if you want to know what's happening. It's filmed in Israel, about Israel, and it's very much in the moment.
Right, right. So that's good. But to and also just in terms of the – you asked about the sex trafficking issue. If you do – you go to the New York Board of Rabbis, nybr.org, www.nybr.org, and I believe Rabbi Gerson's contact would be in there. For those who are interested, she would, I'm sure, be happy to, you know, give out information about how to help on that score. And by the way, in the spirit of interfaith, you know, the other faith groups have organizations that also are, equally strong with helping refugees and battling these humanitarian issues. The Catholic World Service and the Lutheran World Service, and there are others. So it's not, we should give equal time to all of the faith organizations whose mission is to make the world a better place. And as Rabbi Joe said earlier, that's one of the great benefits of living today, of being able to work with arm shoulder to shoulder and arm to arm with other faith groups to work for the betterment of humanity.
And of course, my favorite, the ADL.org Anti-Defamation League. I'm going to try to get the national director, Jonathan Greenblatt, on our show as well. So, of course, that's a major organization. Going back to Passover, what is the most significant part of the Seder, would you say, in your opinion?
I'll take two if you don't mind. One is the children. That, it to me, is the most important. The children sitting around the table, who are first learning. They're being fed, so to speak. How to do the four questions, for instance. There are the four questions at the beginning of the Seder. Manish Tana Halayla Hazel, why is this?
Mikol Halayla.
Mikol Halayla,
I went
very
to
good.
Hebrew school. I was the one who did a lot of the reading of the Jewish words. That I remember so clearly from Hebrew school, although I don't remember a lot more.
Well, I tell you must be from Brooklyn then, because you do remember the important words.
Yes.
they have seeped into general society. Why is this night different than any other night? As you could find as a punchline on a TV show, and people, a lot of people will get it. They know it. It's sort of like become part of popular culture.
Yes.
But the actual all four questions, to hear the kids at the table recite it and understand as they get older what's the point of these questions, and then the rest of the Seder, of course, is answering those questions in a way. It starts with Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves. And it goes through the history. But those four questions, as you asked, what's the highlight?
Rabbi, since you referenced the questions, why don't you just share what the four questions are?
All four?
After, why is this night different from all other nights? What's the second question?
Oh, okay. Well, if we're going to do that. So the four questions, the first one is, why is this night different than all other nights? And the part one of that first question is, on all other nights, we may eat either leavened or unleavened bread, but on this night, we only eat unleavened bread, which is the matzah.
Yes.
Okay, that's the first question. Second, on all other nights, we eat all kinds of herbs, but on this night, we eat especially bitter herbs. The third, on all other nights, we need not even once dip our herbs in any condiment, but on this night, we dip herbs twice. One herb in salt water and the bitter herbs in charoset, which is that, as Rabbi Joe spoke about before, that sweet apple cinnamon mixture that is represents the mortar that the Hebrew slaves had to use to build the pyramids. And the last is, on all other nights we eat either sitting or reclining, but on this night we recline. And, of course, reclining while you're eating, for those who didn't live in Roman or Greek times, that's the sign of luxury, of being free and rich. To be able to recline while you're eating was a symbol of freedom. So those are the four Now, here's
something that's interesting. Yes, and I never quite understood the reclining part. Now you're saying that the reclining is a symbol of freedom. I always thought it was a symbol of being uncomfortable, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? For me, it's hard to, you know, unless if you're in bed eating like, you know, half a pint of ice cream, that's kind of comfortable, right?
Yes, but you're still sitting up in bed. You're not kind of reclining.
Right.
If you're
right.
eating, you're
it
sitting straight up for digestion.
Exactly.
So I never
well,
quite understood that. I never really looked into it. So
yeah.
thank you
well,
for clearing it
yeah,
up.
That's the symbol of freedom. Oddly enough, is to recline while you're eating. And if you look at, you know what, go back to some of the old movies. You know, you'll see that the you know Nero or the Roman Emperor Caesar will be you know they'll be at some banquet and they'll be reclining on these sort of like sofas and soft pillows and that's while they're eating. I never understood that, but that's what this is about. But I do want to point out the things that I just read. If you notice, we call these the four questions, and in every Haggadah, it says the four questions. They're not questions. On except for why is this night different from all other nights?
Yes.
2, 3, and 4. There's no question there. It's a statement. So it's very interesting that they've been come to be known as questions, but really it's just a statement of we do this and we do that, and there's no you know, there's no question at the end of each paragraph.
That's funny that
clause.
You said
yeah.
that, because with all the seders I've been to, I never thought about it. I'm just on automatic the four questions as a paramount part of the service, and I never really thought about that.
Well, you know, well, that's why I'm here.
yes, thank you for bringing the light there.
Next year, maybe we all be well. Next year, ask, you could bring this up at your Seder. Wait a second, why there aren't four questions? There's one question. Why is this night different from any other night? And then there's four statements after that. So
yes,
see if
I definitely
there,
will look into that. Definitely, because I never
that, yeah.
gave it a second thought.
Yeah.
Just like I never give a second thought to inviting you to be on the show, Rabbi. Like I said to Rabbi Joe, I really want you a lot more often. You're so wise, and I love that you present the shows that people of all faiths can hear it. It's not about, oh, that's not my faith, so I have no interest. You present it in a way that regardless of your faith and understanding interfaith and how important it is in the world today. So you do a great job, but I do want you a lot more often.
Well, you know, Rabbi Joe he's the wise son, so he comes first. I'm more like the son who the simple son. I would be the simple son.
I wouldn't call you simple on anything. But you come across more like the backup. All I have to do is say, Rabbi Joe, oh, I'll do it with him. Father Brian, I'll do it with him. I want you to do a show yourself. You could carry a 5-hour show. Let alone an hour.
Yes, a 5-hour show. That would be good. That's a marathon. But the other thing I want to mention, you said the other, very interestingly, here we were leaving the second night of Passover last night, and as we're leaving it, on TV was this live performance of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
And I thought it was, you know, very interestingly how the two holidays have coincided this year more closely than usual.
Yes.
I don't know what the ratings were. I have to take a look at, I don't know if you've seen, you know, the aftermath.
No.
But
did not.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
But what was interesting to me, not only Easter Sunday being on one of the most significant nights of Passover, but it was April Fool's Day as well.
April Fool's, right. Well, we have another, there is an April Fool in our life, which we won't get into.
no, I don't agree.
Another,
it's an April fool.
Issue.
I would say it's a January 1 to December 31 fool.
I see. Got it. But the other thing that the other production that got a lot less attention, and I think we talked about it the other day, was something called Easter Mysteries. And
I couldn't find it anywhere. It was a mystery.
It's a mystery. It played on a lot of NBC affiliates on Sunday morning.
Well, not only did I look at my TV guide, but through my DVR, I go alphabetically as well and typed it all in. It was nowhere to be found. Every resource I have, I didn't Google it because I wasn't on the computer.
Uh-huh.
But you're saying you can send me a link of how to access
that? Yeah, and I think... Right, and for the audience for the show, I think this is I had, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar had some of these, you know, A-level celebrity, you know, performers, including John Legend and some really wonderful actors and singers, but you know, I found that the some of the story, obviously it's a musical. But it repeated some of the, you know, problematic parts of a passion story, you know, putting the way the priests were portrayed and, you know, the story of the high priest making it look like he had the authority to do a lot of these things when, of course, historically it's incorrect. He didn't. But Easter Mysteries is something it was put together to actually be a more positive look at the story and bring out the, you know, the positives for Christians. So for those out there who you know, would like to see a different kind of production, I would recommend it very much.
Okay, and I want to know, what is the mystery of Rabbi Greenberg? What is the mystery of the rabbi?
Well, not too much of a mystery. You know, I don't know exactly where you're going with this, but
just going because just to know a little bit more about you. I'm very respectful. So, is there something you would like to share with us about your background or any kind of special, like the rabbi always shares stories of a personal nature? What would you tell us?
Oh, well, you know what? It's So as Rabbi Potasnik, I love when he talks about his parents and the they were Holocaust survivors, and you know it really is inspiring when he talks about that. So now I understand what you mean. Yeah, you know, it's funny. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was his whole family was wiped out in the Holocaust, and he never really talked about it. And to the extent that when he died, and I would ask I was old enough then to ask my mother, you know, well, where was he from? What was the background? You know, trying to get some history, as we all, you know, sometimes we get bitten by the bug to find out about our genealogy. You know, today people are taking DNA tests. I don't know. Have you done that to find out?
No.
You know, for people today, I think it's hilarious that people today that take that DNA test and they thought they were
yes, one thing,
English,
and
it turns out they were Scottish, or they were from, you know, they had 20% blood from Africa, and
yes.
and it puts the lie, you know, to talk about our unity and diversity, it puts the lie to that there's any pure race. There's no pure race. We're all from somewhere else, and we're all have a mixture of something from somewhere. Certainly in the United States and you know, Western countries where people left and were refugees to a large extent. So this whole idea that there's some kind of you know, supreme race above any other that has this pure blood is just nonsense, both scientifically and scientifically. So with my situation, I got very curious, and so I went on a investigation, and I found out with just a couple of clues that my grandfather kind of left in after he died in a couple of books. In fact, I have my grandfather's set of Chumashim, the five books of Moses, I inherited that, and it's sitting in my office. I'm actually looking at them now. They were printed in Poland in 1898, and they're sitting here on my shelf. I'm afraid to open them now because it's so brittle. The pages are all yellow, but I'm proud to see them and have
awesome.
Them.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll be giving them, you know, to our daughter. So that's something they can pass on, and hopefully.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to send it to me. Okay.
Well, it depends how much, you know, we could work out a deal if you want to, Joyce. It's possible.
Rabbi, how many children do you have?
We have two. And
old are they?
Well, before. Oh, you know what? Is it? It's new. It's 12.
I know the time. We're going to go over a few minutes.
Well,
I have a
conference call at 12. So
all right, you didn't give me a heads up on that. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious, how old are your children?
We have one in college and one in fourth grade.
Oh, I thought you said you have three.
No, just not yet. And
won't
be.
One is on the way?
No. Our hands are full.
All right, that's another story. Okay, I do want you to leave us with your message for our audience today.
Well, the message is that these kind of holidays for me are wonderful opportunities to reach out to your neighbor and to share who you are. And to have them understand more about you, and vice versa, you can partake hopefully and understand more about where they're coming from and what their faith beliefs are, and in that way of education and understanding, we build a much more peaceful, respectful society. And I think I'm hoping that that's something that can continue. To grow, certainly in the kind of environment we're in now.
And I would say ditto on that message. And before I let you leave, just what is your special prayer?
Well, I would say this. God, please, God, grant us, your people, Israel, and everyone who dwells on earth, all peoples, lasting peace, because you are the sovereign, you are the master of peace. And we pray to you to give everyone on the planet your gift of peace.
Rabbi, God bless you and yours. Thank you so much for making time for us today. We really do appreciate you and value you, and we're very grateful to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And, folks, I'll leave you with my special prayer. You are most welcome.
Beautiful.
My special prayer for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, making magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. Thank you, and God bless you all.